You are listening to the Frillibros Tech Podcast, episode 253. If you can't sell ads, sell your company.
Season 6, episode 253 of the Frillibros Tech Podcast. Today is July the 31st, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and announcing his quarterly earnings is my brother, James Furlow.
Seriously, wasn't this the week for everyone to just announce how much they've made? Unbelievable. It was like, here it is for Microsoft, here it is for Yahoo, here it is for Apple, here it is for Intel, here it is for Facebook, here it is for... I mean, it's just like... Oh, I can't keep up. I think even HP... No, HP's on a different cycle. But they did announce that HPE was considering going private, so that happened in the midst of everything.
Whoa, I totally missed that.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, man, I can't keep it all up. So economy's doing well, I think, is the bottom line for the tech sector.
It seems to me as though everybody's making pretty good money. And
yeah.
They either were expected to lose money and actually made more money, or they were expected to make money and they made more money than that. And everybody seems real happy about it.
Just yeah.
Big old deal.
Google and Facebook continue to bank. Mm-hmm. It's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. And I think someone was saying ExxonMobil wasn't doing too well. And if they continued their slide, the top five slots for the most valuable companies in the world would all be tech companies.
It's not.
So right now they hold one through six, except for, I think Exxon's like number three at the moment.
Mm.
So pretty nuts.
Man. Down with oil. Come on,
good
Tesla.
To be tech. Good
this
to be
is your
tech.
Opportunity to catapult yourself to the top echelons. What are the top five? What are the top six?
Let's see here. Most valuable companies. Let's see. Apple's number one. Wait. Market cap. Yeah, I guess this will be it. List of public corporations by market cap size. I feel like this is updated pretty regularly. Apple's number one. Alphabet's number two.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah, this is as of June 30th. Wait, hold on. So Apple's number one, Alphabet's number two, Microsoft is number three, Amazon is number four. I take it back. Berkshire Hathaway is number five, ExxonMobil is number six, and Facebook is number seven.
Wow.
So Facebook's got to step up their game. So let's see here. Amazon is $356. Berkshire is $349. ExxonMobil is $346. Facebook's $326. So they've got a little ways to go there. Apple, by the way, is $596. Alphabet is $514. So that they've spread out a little bit again. And Microsoft is like quote way down there at $434.
Oh, what a poor, pathetic company.
By the way, Johnson & Johnson is number eight. GE is number nine, and Wells Fargo is number ten.
Wells Fargo's.
General Electric, man, just keeps on ticking, don't they?
I know. After all these years.
Incredible. That's of, I guess, yesterday.
That is pretty exciting.
Man.
Yeah.
Right? We're not anywhere on that list. That's okay.
I know, that's okay. Well, we're on the list. We're just really far down.
That's fair.
But... oh man, yeah, it's a pretty crazy week for tech companies and just kind of all of that stuff. And it's kind of weird. Like, you usually get paid a lot of attention to the earnings calls, but this week I was just like, yeah, I don't know, it's fine.
It's summer,
yeah.
That's a winter activity in January when nothing else is happening. That's when you dive into all of it and be like, how are they starting off the year? What does this mean? Right. But now you're like, whatever. Yeah.
I wonder also if I have a penchant for for companies that are doing poorly. Like, if I get really excited, that, you know, I wonder if it's the fact that everybody did really well. I was like, well, bummer, there's nothing to talk about.
that could be it.
I wonder. Interesting. But there's plenty of other stuff to talk about this week that came up as a result of all of this chit chat from these different companies.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, plenty. It's going to be awesome. Looking forward to it. You know
what? Let's jump right into it, James.
Dude, let's do it.
You know what we should do? We should do what we do every week, which is talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. Yes. And what is the corporate opera, James? That's the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course the technology they're developing. But before we get into the show, James has got a disclosure he's got to throw our way.
Yeah, I founded and work for the currently public company, HPI. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. I am also a pretty large owner of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club. Emphasis on the pretty.
Yeah, I'm not.
Maybe a better way to say it is I'm a semi-activist owner of those. Making waves.
Yes, they listen to you're a market leader and opinion shaper.
Yeah, yeah. Oftentimes they follow my advice. It takes them a while for them to figure it out, but eventually they come around.
Oh my gosh, I totally remember what I wanted to talk about before that. Okay. Dang it! I hate it when I do that. I want to talk about early in the show before we get into anything, but I like
we've and then already I forget to do it. Things.
I'm gonna say I'm gonna pull back for a second. Have you seen Stranger Things yet?
No.
Netflix? It is so worth it.
Really?
Yeah, it's 8 episodes. It's pretty quick. They're about an hour each.
Netflix? And
yeah. It's a it's a real good show. Real good. Big fan. I really liked it. Well, I'm glad I didn't bring it up earlier because if I had, it would have been a really short conversation. So back to what we were talking about I'm still an owner of Skull Candy, very temporarily, I think. I'm running out of time to figure out what I want to do here, and. I probably should just sell my share, just be done with it.
Yeah, you know, just let go of the drama.
Exactly. Okay, that's what I'm going to do this week. I promise. I know the last couple of weeks I've said I'm going to figure it out this week, but this week I'll actually do it. Probably not. That's my big disclosure. Nothing exciting there. But if you want to follow me throughout the week, I do have social media stuff. James does too. Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4, NextWiggin, and the number 4.
You know, I continue to dig Twitter. I'm on there and pretty regularly following stuff. I've got a pretty good list, I like to think, of people who I'm following. Now, I'm following like 300 people, but I think I've muted all but maybe a dozen. And recently added 2 new people. You'll appreciate this. Worth following. It's the ANG show. I think it's at ANG show. And then at Positive Sean.
Yeah, Positive Sean.
He's good.
I recently started following him too.
Yeah. So you can follow me. I'm at James Furlow on the Twitters. And jamesfurlow.com for blog stuffs and elsewhere. Probably jamesfurlow.com-ish.
Probably. Nice. I like it. Yeah, cool. So if you want to get more information about the show, anything we talk about, all the topics we bring up and whatnot, talk bunches of stuff. You can find it all at furloughbros.com. That's our main website. All the clicks, links, articles, videos, audio snippets, stuff like that is going to be there. Also, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. We'll deliver all that to your email account just to keep you appraised. And also, If you'd like to support us on Patreon because you like the show, we would super appreciate it. And the link to our Patreon account is there on the furtherbros.com website. So go check it out. Do that. It's going to be awesome.
Yes, yes.
So things that are really exciting to me, specifically rockets and Elon Musk.
Rockets are pretty cool.
When those things come together.
You were in Rocket Club when you were, what was that, middle school?
It was elementary school.
Elementary school. Yeah,
yeah, it was like, it was like third, fourth grade. Yeah, we do. Oh, man, dude, it's, those are so awesome. I would love to get back into that.
Remember you had that one rocket that it would go up and then it had a little, shuttle craft? The little foam thing? And we totally just had it so it would fly straight and like totally went into some neighbor's yard and we were like trying to triangulate and figure out where it might have landed. And then we learned to bend one of the wings so it went in a circle.
So for people that aren't familiar with it, it's like you get these like model rockets that are basically, they're just long tubes with a nose cone, and then they have little solid rockets that you light and they shoot off, and you can shoot them super high into the air, and then they fall back to the ground, and usually they'll have like a little pop at the end of the engine burst that'll shoot out a parachute. But mine had a little styrofoam plane that would get hooked onto it and would fly up into the air. And when it got to the end of its burn, the rocket would fall away and the little styrofoam plane would start, like a shuttle, would start flying. Exactly. The first time we did it, we launched it up into the sky, and it just turns out it gets real high up there and it flies real good. It just went for forever. We never found it. And we were like, yes, we had to go out. And somehow our dad found a replacement one that was not, it was a little bit different, but it was like basically the same size. And he had to make a couple modifications. And he also realized, okay, turn the tail fin a little bit so it just spins in a big corkscrew and we can find it. But that was awesome. I love this. I really like the multi-stage ones.
Because they
would, like, you could build them where you could stack them like 2 and 3 tall. Where you'd literally have one rocket with one motor would send it up, and then it would pop, which we'd usually eject the parachute.
Yeah.
But the other one would, like, but instead it would be right up against another one, and the second one would fire off and it would shoot.
Yes.
So awesome. Did you hear about the guy who jumped out of a plane yesterday without a parachute?
Whoa. Did he survive? It was on,
yes. Yes. That was that's the headline. So he jumped 25,000 feet elevation. No
parachute.
That
sounds like it's high.
It's super high. No parachute, no glider suit, no nothing, and he had to aim for this net and get caught by the net. Yeah,
and he hit the net, obviously.
And he hit the net and didn't die. Yeah, it was some TV show. Yeah, I feel like I should look this up.
That sounds crazy.
Jump into.
Did he win $1 million for doing it?
He's a TV show thing. U.S. skydiver jumps without parachute into net from 25,000 feet. He's done more than 18,000 jumps under his belt. He had to fall dead center into the 100-foot by 100-foot net in Southern California. 2-minute live fall on Fox Television. 42-year-old. Wow. Reached the speed of 120 miles per hour. Yeah, pretty nuts, pretty crazy. And I'll put this link into the show notes because that's not actually what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, because model rockets are, I think, cooler than that. Man, yeah. I gotta get back into it. I just I feel like there's got to be some sort of place around here that sells rockets, and I've got to convince Eleanor that that's the thing to do.
So this is the tricky part. It's relatively easy to get the engines, the motors, sorry. It's relatively easy it's super easy to buy the rockets. You can buy them anywhere. You can buy them on Amazon. It's crazy illegal to fire them off nowadays without serious permitting. And because of 9/11, they were one of the, like, there was a bunch of different stuff that got regulated heavily, and they decided that the ability to build, like, they're essentially HomeKit missiles that were very affordable and had basically no regulation.
That's fair, I guess.
So they decided that we should not be able to do that without it. You can get permits for it and stuff, but it's expensive and it's time consuming. So what you got to look for is like a rocket club, and they'll usually have gone through all the paperwork and got everything.
Yeah, because that could, yeah, all right. Interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's not exactly what you had in mind when you were thinking rockets.
It's not what I had in mind, actually. So Tesla, they shoot their own model rockets,
SpaceX,
as it were. Yeah, SpaceX, Tesla? Sorry. SpaceX shoots their own model rockets. And by model rockets, I mean full-scale rockets. So the whole deal why SpaceX has been excited, right, is they launch the rockets. Then the rockets land themselves on the automated barge on the ocean, which is really an impressive trick shot, but not really, just makes the rockets a lot more expensive. Where you get the financial perk is that then you can launch that rocket again, and you don't have to build an entire new one every time. So this has got huge promise. They've caught five of them. They've actually landed five of them and brought them back, and they're getting ready to launch their relaunch one of these rockets for the first time. And so it turns out they wanted to do like a test to make sure that this would work and everything would be cool.
Yeah.
So they strapped the rocket down to the launch pad, and I don't know
what kind of straps are those.
I have no idea, but they must have been intense because they did a 3-minute full power rocket burn, which is the rocket burn that they would use to get it into space. So they basically did an entire launch without the actual launching part of it. I have no idea how you'd strap something like that down and not have it just destroy itself. It's just crazy to me. But yeah, they did that, and they put the video on YouTube. It's quite cool, very loud, and you just watch it go for 3 minutes as it's motoring along trying to get ready. Everything seemed to go really well. They liked the results.
I can't help but notice there's nobody near it.
Yeah.
Obviously we're a little concerned of it exploding.
Well, they don't let anybody stand near a rocket launch normally.
Why not? Jeez. Because,
well, you know, the
we got guys who are jumping 25,000 feet out of an airplane with no parachute. Let's live a little.
There's only one there's only like a couple of people who are allowed to stand right next to a rocket as it goes off, and they're normally strapped to it.
Yeah.
Going along for the ride. Everybody else stays way back. You know how hot that stuff gets, James? It's really loud, really hot. And there's quite a few chemicals that get shot off that are really not good for you if you're breathing them in.
I could see that.
Yeah, so
success. It was a success.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're gonna.
So I guess obviously it's not moving. So that, how big of a deal is that?
Well, so what I think is interesting about this is that they've, you know, the whole idea of this rocket was reusability. So a lot of times the engines aren't designed to burn more than once.
Surprised.
Right. And so clearly what this proves is that you can, cause this isn't the first time that they've fired off a rocket more than once. That's part of the big engineering test, was to do that. So this is just okay, it's gone to space and landed and can fire off again.
Yeah.
And, they're doing their due diligence, because the thing is, they're not going to do this for free. They're going to take somebody's satellite, put it onto the rocket, and launch it into space. And so there's somebody with a real expensive satellite who's got to be the first group to.
I wonder how expensive that little test was.
I can't even imagine. I'm sure it was incredibly expensive. Solid rocket fuel is It's not the most expensive thing on Earth, but it ain't cheap.
Yeah, no, ink has that beat.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
It's really funny. Yeah, it's exciting. It's really exciting for the future of space travel and stuff because it's,
oh, man,
it's showing some, you know, doing something
big.
Yeah,
success.
I still think that the big question is, can it land again? That's going to be the tough one. It's the landing it multiple times. It's going to be a real challenge. Launching it is a big deal and a huge success. And because even if it's only, you only get two uses per rocket, that'd be a, you know, actually I have no idea what the financials are because there's all sorts of extra equipment that they have to put into it for it to be able to land. So I'm not sure it would be any cheaper if it can only launch twice, but yeah, you got to be able to land it again. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You know what I'm not excited about?
Tell me.
When is the last time you've bought something and had to use your credit card?
Yesterday.
Yesterday? How did that experience go?
Depends. I had to use it a couple of times. And
really?
Yes. And a few of them were quite pleasant. Wouldn't have noticed because I just gave my credit card to somebody and it came back. Everything worked fine and I signed. Sometimes okay. I just swiped my card and everything was fine. And then other times I put my chip into the machine and it took a real long time. And people got mad at me for not doing it right the first time.
Ooh.
And it's just, yeah, the chip and pin thing, it's got...
That's what I want to talk about.
All right. Nice. All right.
Yeah, it's... So for anyone who's listening to this, I'm sure you've now have one of those. And dude, it's a pain. I get kind of why it's done. Of course, did you actually have to put in your PIN number?
I do, but I have a debit credit card.
Oh,
so I debit okay. everything.
Got it. Yeah, just a regular credit card, you're supposed to also have a PIN, but it doesn't, you don't normally get asked to do it. To which I'm like, what is this doing for me? But yeah, so you are not alone. I've heard this. I read an article about it, which we'll link to. And then I was listening to a radio show and he was maybe complaining about it a little bit. And I myself have just been like, man, this is a pain. It's horrible. And what gets me is there was like a rush to implement it. And so the machines are just lame. For example, all it does is beep at you. I'm like, what does the beep mean? Oh, I have to read the screen. And the way that they set it up is the text, it's just, I don't want to say, it's not glanceable. You actually have to read what it's telling you to do.
Yeah.
And then even when it's accepted, it's like, wait, are we good? Like,
yeah, is this, are we happy? Are we, yeah.
Can I take it out now? What's going on? So, and they're just super temperamental. So all that to say, I think, I'm just complaining that we used to have something that worked really, really well here in the U.S. And because of fraud reasons, it's now super lame. And I know a lot of places that are now using the chip thing because of the way the structure's been set up. It reduces the incentive for companies to accept things like Apple and Android Pay because they get a better deal with the chip. Because that was the whole thing of how they got them to do it. It was, if they use the chip on the card, then like Visa or MasterCard or whoever is going to, they will take on the fraud liability. If you don't use the chip, that store takes on the fraud liability.
Right. Which was a big change in laws at the beginning of this year.
Yeah. So it's just annoying.
Really annoying.
It's just one of those cultural trends. Made an observation. I think it's gaining enough steam and regularism that it's worth calling out and saying this is ripe for disruption again because they broke it.
I think that's what gets me about it too is that when this was happening, we talked about back how like it seemed like a great opportunity for people because people people would buy a credit card reader and use the same credit card reader for decades. Yeah. It was really hard to get stores and companies to, in mass, go out and buy new credit card sliders. How do you get them to do that? And put specifically, if you were a company like Google or Apple or PayPal or whoever, and you wanted them to introduce NFC, you know, chip card readers so you could do the digital wallet stuff. And that was the big question. How do you get stores to go out and build the infrastructure for you? And this was like the perfect opportunity because all of a sudden the companies were hugely incentivized to go out and buy new card readers so they could read chips. And all you had to do was then pitch at the time, all right, also put in an NFC card chip reader into your little device. And it's just, it just feels like somehow we had this really good opportunity to everybody get onto a more secure, more usable, you know, system all at the same time. And we've completely fumbled. it's not happening. Like, how is this possibly getting worse? We were so, like, there are so many good solutions out there. And
I wonder if companies like Apple and Google are just like shaking their heads going, because they saw it, they all knew it.
Yeah.
And they're not, I don't know. At least in the area that I live, very few of them accept it. Who do the chip thing, they don't necessarily do the Apple Pay or the Android Pay, whatever, the NFC payment piece.
Right.
And it's almost like whoever was a salesperson went around, got everybody, and was just selling them cheap garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, which, I don't know. I agree with that. It seems like that's what happened. I think what's interesting about this is that one of the big arguments is that this has been, chip and PIN has been the standard in Europe for a really long time.
Which that should tell you something, right? The sucker's old.
Yeah. You'd also think that it was, yeah, I think that's my biggest concern, right? You saying like it's ripe for disruption because there's got to be something better. And I sit there and go, it's been there for a long time, which means that this is like a fully mature technology. This isn't like Pokemon Go, where the awesome first three updates are going to have huge bug fixes and the performance is going to have this really rapid performance increases. No, this is old. Everybody already knows what it is, which means these, like, the long waits and these bad chip card, like, things, they're all, this is a mature technology, and yet it's so bad. It's so just, and I the user interface of it is such a step backwards, and I get the idea that you need to do it for safety, but you can't possibly tell me that there wasn't a better way to implement this. And like you said, it's the whole, I do this almost every time when I use it. I put my card in, I do the transaction, and then it says wait until the transaction's done to pull your card. And it will tell me, okay, transaction's done, pull your card. And I will sit there and hesitate for a second and a half, 2 seconds, because I'm afraid that if I pull it out too early, like, it's going to mess everything up. Like,
it freaks out if you do that.
Yeah. You can start all over. There's no, like, it's just the end of the world. And I sit there and I go,
store clerk's just like, really? You just did that? Come on.
Yeah. You could tell that they're so annoyed too. But as a result, I'm much more cautious. I'm much slower. So instead of trying to be as fast as possible with the card readers like I normally would and just get like, I put the card, instead of, I don't like line the card up and then like slide it naturally. I basically put it like halfway into the card reader, slide it as fast as I can, and pull it half. I mean, like, the card is in there for a split second, and if it didn't get the reader, too bad. You're gonna do what you can. Like, I just, you know, and there's that. And when people like me all of a sudden really slow down and come to a full stop, like, the people that already were slow and cautious, they're going to go even slower now. And it doesn't seem like it's the sort of thing where, well, this is just really uncomfortable. People have to get used to it. And once they get used to it, it'll go faster. It actually seems to me like they're interface issues that I'm like, I don't know how to get better at this. Like, I'm not sure. Like, everything's a little too different. And there's not enough consistency from point of sale device to point of sale device. So I could see how it would take a really long, long time for this to go any faster. And the car just sits there for so long. It's like 5-6 seconds. It drives me crazy.
Well, and it's, we have other technology now that is significantly faster and accomplishes the same goal.
Yeah, it's just as secure. The whole NFC stuff with, you know, yeah. Well, and or I should say this. That's part of the brilliance of the Apple's, like, tokenized transaction thing is that each transaction is actually quite unsecure. It's as unsecure as the old-style credit cards. But each transaction is completely separate. So the actual, like, danger is completely negated. So, I don't know. Yeah, whatever. I just...
Yep.
I don't know what to do, James.
Cry.
I don't know what to do. Yeah.
Go buy something. Feel better about it. Go take a walk, maybe.
We'll go. We'll be like Verizon, and we'll buy something.
Yeah, there you go.
Tee that up for you. You're up.
So, oh yeah, I guess that is mine. So, in the middle of our show last week, Verizon bought Yahoo.
Yes, they did. We almost wanted to talk about it, but we're like, we'll give it a little, little time.
Give it some time to simmer here. So how much are they paying for them? A lot less than they used to be worth. So they're buying them for $4.8 billion. And interestingly, they are buying their ad network, their operations. I didn't read this article, so I don't know where any information is. They're not buying their patents. They're not buying their stake in Alibaba or Yahoo Japan.
Hmm.
Right? Those are the things that are not included. So they're getting the people, they're getting the portal, their email, things like that. And there's questions on whether or not the name Yahoo will remain at all. And it's definitely being folded in within AUL. No, wait, that's not it. That's Average Useful Life. AOL, online. And so, yeah, it's going to be part of that. And there's questions about Marissa Meyer. And I think she's going to get a severance payout and kind of be done, I think is how that's going to go.
Yeah. Big old severance payout.
So I think this is interesting. They were founded in 1994 and they were huge. They were one of the big guys. They were the Cinderella story, the part of that .com dream, if you could. And
they one of the big winners too.
Yeah. Totally. They were my homepage at one point in time. And
oh, really?
Yeah, they were. And I distinctly remember I was in college. So this must have been in 2002, 2003 sometime when I got a call from, because that's how the world worked. We didn't text. I got a call from my mom that was like, hey, have you checked out this new thing? It's called a Godgel out there. It's Godgel. This Mountain View company. They're doing search engine stuff. And I remember explicitly thinking like, no, I use Yahoo. Why would I rock the boat and switch? I don't understand. She's like, oh, okay. Well, I just hear it's got a good clean interface and the results are pretty good. And I don't know, you should check it out. I was like, ah, whatever, mom. What are you talking about? And it turns out her mom's a genius.
Yeah. Very, very early.
Yeah. And so, and at one point in time, Google tried to sell their stuff to Yahoo. And Yahoo's like, no, dude, algorithms are cold and dumb. We have the personal touch.
Mm.
And over time, that they obviously did not keep up in the search space. But one of the things that I think is really interesting is that they definitely saw themselves as a web portal and as a media or entertainment company. And as a result, they actually said this is one of the things that Marissa Meyer really struggled with, and well, probably everyone before her, was she wanted to do a bunch of tech and development type of stuff and even did a bunch of acqui-hires of software companies to try to bring them in and really tightened up the hiring requirements for people. And you go, but at that point in time, they had a highly ingrained culture that was like, no, we're not a software company. We're
right.
A media company that happens to be online. And, you know, I, that as well, for obvious reasons, did not work out too well for them. And so they struggled to attract top talent because top talent doesn't want to go to a media company. They want to go to a software company. And I think it's something that you've talked about with Facebook, where Facebook does not view themselves, rightly so, as a social network. They view themselves as a technology software company that happens to focus on the social aspect of software. Right. And Yahoo was the other way around. By the way, does this remind you of another company that doesn't view themselves as a software company, but more as a media entertainment company? Perhaps more ephemeral in nature?
Oh, yes, it does. Snapchat?
Yeah, that's it's a ton of this stuff that I was reading about the heyday of Yahoo going, wow, that... Like, Snapchat's proud of the fact that they're an entertainment company, and that's what they want to be, and that's what their focus is. And I think at the moment, okay, yeah, they're doing some pretty cool stuff and coming out with features faster than normal and things like that. But, man, they do not view themselves that way.
Yeah. I made this observation back when MySpace collapsed. And
yeah, that's another great example.
You know, that was the first time I really saw it. And I could just feel the difference in the product and the overall platform and how it felt. And because one felt like it was just, you know, yeah, one felt like it was stable and well built and clean and just really focused on building this cool thing and then let people fill it up with whatever they wanted. And that was Facebook. The other one felt really janky and weird and unstable, and that was MySpace. And people come into these sorts of things saying, you know, I want to be entertained, I want customizability. And then when they actually, like, have to choose, they end up choosing ones that give them less customizability and force them to come up with more of their entertainment on their own. I don't know. I look at Yahoo and... just as a platform for delivering media, it's not that great. It just wasn't that good at doing that. It didn't deliver media to me and make me feel like, wow, this is really amazing and new and you bring something new to the table. It's like you know that they'd love to have had a Netflix-like service. They tried to build that with their Yahoo video services and have TV shows and have stuff like that. And never took off. So why did it work for Netflix and not Yahoo? And I would sit there and I'd go, because at the time, Netflix was bringing something new to the table, internet-only video.
Right.
And they were bringing new technology. And then you look at, well, Amazon was able to do it. Why were they able to do it? Well, they were able to do it because they had the entire AWS backing them up. Which, by the way, Level 3 runs most of their servers on AWS. Like, it's, you know, that backbone was incredibly important and allows you to bring something new to the table. And Yahoo just couldn't bring anything new enough to the table to bring enough value to hire really talented people to make content. And
they were chasing yesterday's hot newness.
Exactly.
And she kept buying companies that didn't quite break out. And you go, well, what do you expect them to do?
Right, exactly. And you sit there and she was trying to do what Unilever did with Dollar Shave Club, where she was trying to buy success. Look, we can't innovate success.
Yeah, we're kind of a money bulb thing, yeah.
Right, so we'll buy innovation. We'll invest in a bunch of small properties, hoping that one of these, you know, a handful, we'll buy 100 small properties, hoping that 5 of them become super valuable. And then we'll focus on those and we'll leverage that into the next big thing. And it was just a series of different issues that, which is actually not a bad strategy, honestly.
It's a big risk. You know, well, and that's a strategy that Google does. They just do it all in-house instead of buying. But they've got something that's churning out so much cash that investors are willing to be patient with them. And that was kind of actually one of the reasons why she got as much time as she did. They owned Alibaba.
Right.
And that little bet paid off pretty, pretty well. But eventually they got to the point where their core business, when you took out the value of Alibaba and some of their other holdings, and then you looked at just the core business, it was a negative number. And that was where investors started to get nervous pretty quick, because they were like, well, yeah, they could keep going for like 5 to 10 years, but they're just going to squander this Alibaba payout. And we're like, well, we want that money back. And and they actually looked into just spinning off their holding company, spinning off a holding company for Alibaba and just being its own thing, and probably the Yahoo thing, I think, as well. But because the problem was, even though it was worth, I don't know, whatever they were saying it was quite a lot of money. If they ever tried to sell their stake in it, the tax consequences would be huge. And the way that the tax code is set up is you can't just spin off a separate company in an effort to avoid taxes. You have to have like a legitimate reason for doing it. And so they, even though they applied for it, they ended up rescinding it. And now investors were like, okay, you got to figure it out. So they kind of got stuck into this place where the only real option, if they didn't want to have investors start suing them and get kicked out, was to sell the company. Then they would have a justifiable excuse to say, oh, and we're spinning off these other assets. That's not, quote, part of the sale. And so that's essentially what they're doing. And then investors can do whatever they want and sell those shares or something. I don't know. I don't totally get it. But it's kind of like a subsidiary of Alibaba and Yahoo Japan kind of weird thing. It's kind of, if you want to own those two specific companies, buy this one stock.
Right.
And that's how that's going to work. Very strange. But yeah, just kind of an interesting scenario. And I wonder how long was she super optimistic that this is going to be awesome and we're going to turn it around? Or did she accept the job, start to learn more, and go, ooh, okay, there's some risk here. This could come back to get me, but I think we can do it. And she definitely put together a plan and said, if we do this, I think it'll turn around. And then at what point in time did she watch plans not totally come to fruition and go, okay. You know, you've seen it for sports matches. We're like, we can do this. Right. We just got to get the first down. And then you don't get the first down and you go, okay, now we got to go 15. This is a little harder. We haven't done it all game.
I think her $44 million golden parachute coupled with the $122 million payout for selling it should tell you that from the very beginnings of their negotiations, there was a real awareness that her job was to either save the company or sell it. Those were the two options. This was the end of the road, and they were going to pay her an incredible amount of money in order to, in order to do that.
What'll be interesting to see is if she goes on to do something else, or if she's like, sweet, now I can raise my kids.
Yeah, I got a feeling she's going to go on and do something else. I think she's made so much money over the years. I don't think she's doing it to make more money. I think she wanted to venture out from the shadow of Google and prove that she could. Yeah, which, you know, I get that. And
I would just love to be a board member for like a dozen different companies. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
You're like, you're not really responsible, but yet you get a say in everything. You're not in the day-to-day, but you, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not that smart, so I wouldn't be great at it. I'm more of a doer than a thinker.
I think you have to pay a lot of attention, like a lot more attention than you want to admit. I bet you there's just a tremendous amount of documents that you get that you have to read, parse, understand, and then comment on.
Yeah, and synthesize.
It's a lot of homework.
I hate homework.
I know.
Don't put me on a board.
Yeah, I want an honorary board position. That's what I'm looking for. Just put my name to it because my name is so valuable. I don't know. Yeah, it's Yahoo. Oh, man. Well, you want to know who is making a bunch of money off of their ads? Oh, who? Baby. Facebook.
Oh, my gosh. Those guys.
They're gone like gangbusters. They made a ton of money. Everybody was really expensive. And
they're up to what, 1.7 billion users now?
Yeah, they're coming up on two bills.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's nuts how big they're getting.
Remember back in the day when it was like Facebook and Twitter, about the same size, who's going to break free?
Who's going to break free? Yeah.
Facebook.
Facebook's going to break free. Yeah, winner. So Facebook makes all of its moolah off of the advertisements that it delivers to users, either in the sidebar or
you should go work for them. I think you would like it, and they can afford you.
Would love to go work for Facebook, to be totally honest. Everybody wants to work for Facebook. And I don't have somebody who can tell somebody, you need to hire this kid. Mm. And that I know of. I'm trying. But yeah,
I'd like Mark Zuckerberg on Facebook. Maybe that would help.
That might help. I knew a guy who actually he got hired as part of a subcontracting thing for this role at Facebook, and they decided they actually had hired him as part of this like subcontractor thing, and then they decided to they didn't want to outsource it, they wanted to do it internally, and so they before he even got to start they fired him, and you know there was just like cancel the contract. We're not doing this, and he was like really distraught. He's like, I was looking forward to this job, like I'd be good at it. So he was kind of like flustered, and somebody suggested, well, I mean, it's Facebook. Have you tried, like, you know who the hiring manager was? Have you just reached out to them? And he was like, okay. So he just, just searched Facebook for the person. Obviously they're on it. He finds them, sends them a message and say, hey, I'm the guy for this thing. I understand if you're not, if you're not high, like, I just wanted to say, I'm still really interested in the job. You had hired me to do this. If you still want me, I would be happy to come and work for Facebook directly as part of the team. And they actually ended up saying, yes, we'd like to hire you as a result.
That's awesome.
And then they ended the project before he even got to start the second. just for real. God. I was rooting for you, man, but I thought that was really clever, especially with Facebook, man. If it's amazing how powerful it is just to search for them on Facebook and see if you like, just let them know, reach out to the hiring managers. But yeah, so they were having this discussion and, you know, they make all their money off of advertisements, right? And we know how they put them in the newsfeed, they put them on the sidebars, but they've reached this issue where they sit there and they do a bunch of testing on different people to see engagement levels and how to keep people involved. And they've gotten to the point where there's a balance about how many ads you can put in the newsfeed before people start to get disengaged. Because people want to see their friends. They want to see the things they're interested in, not just the things that are getting paid to get into, put in their face. And Facebook has done a bunch of studies, done a bunch of work, really figuring out, okay, where's the line? How many ads can we put into the newsfeed before it starts to – there's negative consequences for it.
They're like about two ads per scroll ago, but
yeah. but they've decided that,
does that include sponsored posts? Is that part of, is that,
I think
also
so. I believe okay. so. Anything posts. They're making money off of, or basically gotcha. They're saying they've come out and said like, look, we've literally added as many ads as we can at this point. There is no more space in the newsfeed. If we add any more ads, we're going to start having a degraded product, which will make having ads be real pointless. So they've run into this new problem of it's like now if they want to grow revenue, they've got to increase
Welcome to the
users, which is, you know, they've still got 4 billion left people to get on, I guess, but there is a real issue of getting to that all 6 billion of us on Facebook using it. And they're very afraid of the slowdown in growth, because then their ad revenue is just going to stabilize because they can't add any more revenues. They can't just add more ads to the portfolio. And
how does Google deal with this? Because obviously they've got that same issue.
Well, they're kind of weird in that they can grow the number of searches and in ways that Facebook doesn't. So for them, it's like, how do you bake Google search into iOS? How do you bake Google into Android? How do you build, you know, it's built into Chrome. It's built into this. It's built in. Their goal is just get Google search everywhere. So you're constantly searching Google and they're constantly feeding ads to you. Whereas Facebook, just the way people engage, it's not quite, you can't like, it's hard to increase your engagement really quickly, especially because they're at this like balancing point of, you know, how do we get people to come back more often? Well, we know we can have fewer ads, which is complicated because you're like, well, then what's the point of having more ads? And so the other option, I think this is really interesting, is that their big thing, and this is what they're going to be moving forward with, is they're going to say, look, we're not going to add any more ads at this point. We're going to try to grow the user base, but more importantly, we're going to try to build better ads so we can charge more for ads.
We'll just charge more for ads.
Higher. Yeah, well, you can do that. But they feel like they need to prove that the value of the ads go up and therefore they're going to charge more, which is interesting because when Apple launched their iAds platform, that was the big pitch. That's what they were going to do different. They were going to build really great, engaging advertisements so that instead of just getting, you know, a banner flash at you and get super annoyed, you'd actually have these sub apps basically that you could like click on and they would be interesting and engaging. That's what they were trying to get to. And this is what Facebook wants to build. And this is my question. Is that possible? Is that a real expectation? And if so, how do you do it?
Well, it kind of reminds me of instant articles in a sense where that, I don't know, the whole point of an ad is to get you to click. So how do you get people to click?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what they're going for?
I think so. They're saying more engaging. They want more. So it's not just you click through, but you click through and you engage. You know, it's not just you see the McDonald's hamburger and you click through, but you see the McDonald's hamburger and you, you know, engage. You get more from it. There's this scientific idea called cognitive ease that has to do with actually, there's a really good video on by Veritasium on YouTube about cognitive ease and how branding works as part of this whole thing. But this idea that when there's repeated ideas that get pushed to you again and again and again, just the familiarity makes it easy for your brain to think about it and it feels more comfortable and it feels better. Yeah. And so ads and branding, a big part of everything they do is Coke is a great example of their whole deal is trying to trigger cognitive ease. They just have Coca-Cola. They got Coke bottles everywhere, the Coke brand logo everywhere with this just sort of really campy, dumb, like feel good music. Like it's not even good. They're just trying to have people smiling, drinking Cokes in the summertime and just hope that it builds this cognitive ease. If I hope, I mean, it definitely does. It works really well. And so Facebook is sitting there going, if we can do something more than that, if we can get people to get in and actually engage with this, we can build brand loyalty and this excitement about whatever the products are trying to be sold at an increased rate. And they've got the advantage of knowing what you're interested in. Like they own all of Facebook's data. So they can see like, what kind of friends do you have? What are your friends into? What kind of articles do you like? What sort of comments do you make when you make them? Like what do you find interesting? And then try to get the ads that you're interested in delivered to you and B, build something more engaging. And I guess my question is there an example of this working really, really well? Or is this a pipe dream that everybody thinks should be possible, but nobody's ever actually done?
Well, it's interesting because Facebook doesn't make the ads. They make the platform that you can make the ads on.
Right.
And so the way that they kind of need to go the Google route of saying, we're going to make these more relevant to where we know that you're going to want to click on it. Mm. And you do that by a better tracking who's clicking on it and why, so that you presented it at the right time. And then, but then B, somehow also making tools that make it easier for, say, like you and I, to make an ad that's decent. And I don't know totally how you would do that part of it.
Yeah.
Outside of, I don't know, having Facebook classes watch this video on writing headlines or something.
Maybe.
And I'm just trying to think, because the platform's crazy easy right now to use, so ease is not a problem. But the quality is the issue.
Right.
And again, it's not like they're... That was the whole Apple's whole thing is, we're going to make the ads in partnership with other people.
Right.
And Facebook could do something like that, where they've got primo ads, where you've got to be spending $100,000 or more on your ads or something like that. And then they've got a set of designers and ad experts who are working with you. Maybe, but...
They become their own ad agency with special access to special tools on their platform.
Yeah. In which case, maybe, I don't know. It's not, like you said, it's not easy to do. And the other option would just be to figure out a different type of ad that they could implement. Though I'm trying to figure out. So they've got the video thing where it automatically starts playing, but there's no audio, and there's that, which is a different type of ad. They could do something similar like that, where it's, here's a game or something that
yeah.
you can tap on and start doing your thing with, which reminds me of those banner ads back in the days. Ugh.
Yeah. Click on this thing.
I don't know, to be honest. And the trick is, they're not the ones making the ads. So it's hard, because they're kind of at a loss of control. Because I could go make a garbage ad. Other than maybe they're adding some artificial intelligence to when they're doing the screening to say, is the image that you've shown relevant and go well with the text that you put in the box?
That would be really interesting to feed a artificial intelligence with like just a billion things, you know, or just feed an artificial intelligence with a picture and a quality of engagement, like, you know, I like what could you do? How would you do this?
Because I know that right now they're scanning photos, and you can only have a certain percentage of text in a photo when for an ad. If it's not an ad, you can do whatever you want. But so they're looking at the picture, but right now they're just looking for text. But could they take it the next step further and say, well, what's the picture actually of?
Right. I was going to say, it would be really fascinating to try to build a neural network where all you do is you say, you try to gauge the actual engagement of different pictures and different types of advertising and different logos and stuff. And you feed all that information into a neural network and have it just get really good at predicting what people are going to. That'd be cool. That'd be interesting. Be really interesting to try to figure out.
And we're gonna get into and I'm gonna bring this up now just because I think it works. So Microsoft is launching a couple new things for their Word platform or for Office stuff, mm-hmm. and some of them are kind of dumb, but one of the really interesting ones is with their Word application, and it's called Editor. And essentially, the quote is, we wanted to go far beyond the current spelling and grammar capabilities and focus more on what you did wrong and how it should be fixed. So, for example, they have this sentence where it says, recycling the majority of paper you use. It actually underlines it and said, this is pretty wordy. You should hear some suggestions of most, many, most of. So you might say, recycling most of the paper you use. And so they're using their artificial intelligence learning to say, here's how to write better.
Yeah.
Beyond just spelling and grammar. We're going to help you with your sentence structure. And I think they're going to do things like wordiness, non-inclusive language, differences in tone, lack of consistency in hypernation, and other areas such as jargon, slang, passive voice, and cliches, and the use of double negatives. So they're picking up on all of these things. And so I could see Facebook doing a similar thing where they're saying, hey, we know you wrote this ad. What if you said it this way?
That's interesting. Yeah, and building it specifically for using their algorithms, because they've got all, and their data sets to say, look, we know what catches people's, or we know if an ad catches people's attention or not, because we know how many people clicked on it. Yep. And all we're going to do is feed that ad, that picture, that block of text, that whatever into the algorithm or into the neural network until it learns the patterns that make for an engaging ad. And then we'll just base it on that and we'll give recommendations based on that. That's exactly, I could see that. That would make a lot of sense to me.
I could also see, so like right now they're targeting stuff. It's okay. So if you go in to make an ad, you can target based on location, based on age, based on interests. There's a few other things as well. And they're like occupation, I think might be one. So you can target on quite a few things, and then they'll tell you approximately here's how many users we expect to get on Facebook and look at it during however long you set it up for. You might say, well, I want to do $40 for 2 days or something, or over a week. And it can tell you per day, here's kind of how many people we expect to see it as a result of it. You know, so you can play that game. That would be another area where I could see them trying to get better at it. A, giving me better granular options, but B, looking at the ad. And I think Google does this with their stuff where they will go to the link and see what the landing page is, analyze the landing page and go, hey, here's some suggested keywords based on the page that we saw. And Facebook could do a very similar thing saying, hey, we looked at the link that you're sending people to. Here's who we think would be a good target for you.
Yeah.
So I those are the kind of tweaks that I could see them making to where it's improving the platform and its performance, and they're still not having to make ads themselves. Just come out some of my crazy thoughts.
Yeah.
And they just get better at the reporting side. That's the other.
Yeah.
So like we've got pixels on all the sites so that we know when people visit and where they went and blah, blah, blah. But can they make the reporting side even better? So yeah, we're charging more for the ads, but you're learning a lot more about them too.
Right.
So right. There you go. So it's a good problem they have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm jealous.
I don't feel bad for them at all. It's like Google. Man, it's just, how do we get people to click on more ads? We're just, I don't know. We want to move from 9 billion to 11 billion somehow.
Yeah. I want to see the real billions rate.
They got to get up to number 5. You know, number 7 is not an acceptable place for them to be.
Yeah.
Really.
How old is Facebook?
Yeah, I know, right?
It's crazy. That's just so nuts.
Zuck. I still don't. I don't know if I like the guy, but he's growing. He's maturing on me.
Yeah.
We'll see
yeah.
if Spiegel ever gets there.
Yeah. Don't count on it.
yes.
So I wanted to talk a little bit. I guess it looks like I've got just quite the lineup of Apple stuff. This is interesting. I don't normally do Apple rumor stuff or anymore because it's kind of pointless and but sometimes like things start to firm up and become really pretty obvious of what direction Apple is going and how they're building it. And it primes the pump for what's coming down. And weeks like this is kind of a weird week of some stuff got leaked about iPhone, some stuff.
That's probably all around the quarterly earnings information comes out. Yeah,
well, it seems to me that I was going to say quarterly earnings was a big thing, but there was other stuff going on, and so we're going to kind of go through all of these. And I'm going to start from the bottom up, which won't affect the listeners. It'll only affect James. So the first thing is, it seems like there's really good evidence at this point that the new iPhone will not be called the iPhone 7.
Huh.
But it's going to be called the iPhone 6 SE.
Huh. Wait, don't they have one of those already?
No, they have the iPhone SE.
Wait, they have a 5SE?
No,
and
the iPhone SE,
uh-huh.
And the iPhone 6S. And so they're going to come out with the iPhone 6 SE.
Why? Okay. Why don't you just call it an iPhone Pro and leave it alone?
Or just an iPhone phone. Just call them iPhones. The 6-inch iPhone, the 5-inch iPhone, and the 4-inch iPhone. Why? Yeah.
What are they? One of them, the MacBook Pros. They've got the 15-inch and the 17-inch, but it's all MacBook Pro.
Exactly. Yeah. I have a feeling. I read this article and I don't know why, but this is a rumor. They might change the name. But seriously, if they do this, I feel like it's over for Apple. Like they were a company that won, that they were able to do things in their naming. And this is a lot of this was attributed to Steve Jobs' ability to sell stuff, but to basically like make things that were boring sound futuristic and ahead of their time. And I really get the feeling with the current Apple naming conventions that they have in a couple of different areas where they somehow are able to make things sound less exciting than they actually are. And the perfect example to me is the whole like Retina view screen, the Retina screens, right? It was it had a specific DPI. There's like a standard way to talk about it in the industry. They weren't doing anything magical, but Steve Jobs said, no, see, the thing is at 6 inches, your eyes can't resolve the pixels. And we call it the Retina display. And it was really, you know, it was just from a marketing perspective. It was brilliant in what to call it, gave it a name, something that didn't just associate it. It was a definable term, which was really smart, not just a catchy name. And But it was also a really catchy name. You know, they'll do stuff like with the EyeSight camera, where it's just called the EyeSight camera. Well, you mean just the camera. It's just the camera. Why would we call it the EyeSight
camera? Was it the Fusion Drive? Yeah.
Yeah.
3D Touch. Yeah, yeah.
They give these naming conventions. They give these names that are just not as exciting as they really should be, and you can't sink your teeth into them. And then every once in a while, they do stuff like this, which I am personally a fan of the idea that the S-Cycle phones was a huge mistake. And I think the only reason why it didn't get corrected, well, the first one made sense because the iPhone, they had the iPhone 3G. And then the iPhone 3GS. And the S literally stood for speed. And then they had the iPhone 4. And then they had the 4S. The
glass, yeah.
And by the time they got to the 4S, Steve Jobs was really sick. And already distracted. And I think that the first S naming convention made sense. But I think that this like weird cycle that they go through where they have a name, they have a number, and then a number and everything else, they just have the model name. It's just the Apple TV. What generation? Some, you know, the difference between the first generation or the second and the third generation Apple TV is entirely internal. They look exactly the same. They don't have different names. They're both called the Apple TV. You have to flip it over and see what kind it is. They get away with this sort of stuff all the time where they just name things. Oh, this is what it is. It's the iPad. And
well, and it helps reduce the drop-off in the sales cycle because normal customers don't care. So, yeah, I'll just take whatever the latest one is.
And I think they really, really like those giant bumps every time they have like it's a new generation of phones. They want to give it a different name. So people go out and find the different name thing. But I think at this point, you either got to do what they do with the iPads, which is it's the iPad, the iPad Air, the iPad Air Pro, the iPad Air Mini, you know, the iPad. They've got all these different like naming conventions. It's weird and it's hard to keep track of, but at least every time they come out with something, it's got a new name. But it doesn't have this, it doesn't feel like they skip a generation every year in development. And what drives me crazy as an engineer is that people, you know, people re-report the S years as the off years. They don't really do any, they don't really make any big changes. And you're like, honestly, some of the biggest internal changes they've ever made were on S years from generation to generation. Like, they make huge changes in the S years. They just don't change the physical body on the from the outside. And yet Apple gets beat around for being, oh, it's just an S cycle. It's not really that big of a deal. And I don't know. It bugs me. And maybe Apple has internal data where they sit there and they go, honestly, we don't see any real difference. And it's fine. It's not a big deal. But I seriously think that calling it the iPhone 6SE, I think calling it the iPhone SE kind of muddled it a bit, but at least getting rid of the number, I actually think getting rid of the number helped. I think calling it the SE Pro would be fine. The SE Plus, the SE Pro.
What is the SE? I don't even.
That nobody means knows nothing. Either. The special edition.
Yeah, no, you have your, I think like you just said, you have iPhone, then you have different, and then you have three different sizes. And within each of those sizes, you have different memory blocks, just like with Macs. That's
right.
It's an iPhone.
Exactly.
It's easy, it's simple, and whatever. Yeah, you do ads that talk about how it's all new and awesome, and because it's not like they, I don't know. And they get away from, I guess part of their problem is they sell previous generation phones as well, I think, still. And maybe that's their way of trying to differentiate the previous generations or something.
Well, what you do is you name it after its biggest, most obvious feature. It's the iPhone Plus, the iPhone, the iPhone Pro. You could have those different names and then keep those names from generation to generation and to differentiate all these different products. But they don't do, I don't know, just drives me nuts, man. I want it to be better. It doesn't feel very good. It feels like a very uninspired way to do it. And I think at this point, even if they call it the iPhone 7, it would run into the same dilemma of being a just kind of a boring name. And the theory is that they're not going to do that for two reasons. Number one, it's not a big external change. They're going to look externally very similar to the current generation of phones. But the other big reason is that next year is the 10-year anniversary. So they want to have like a big, you know, if they're going to save up for the iPhone 7, they don't want the 10-year anniversary to be an iPhone 7S. They want it to be, which I'm like, just don't call it that. That's fine. Like,
pull Microsoft and skip a number.
Exactly. Or stop with the numbers. It's just ridiculous. The numbers are so stupid. You don't do it on literally any other of your other product lines. And come up with better names, man. I don't know. Whatever. Okay, there's other cool stuff that happened this week.
Okay, so what else happened with Apple?
Bob Mansfield. I could put the S in the wrong place. He's back in the driver's seat, as it were. Bob Mansfield was a hardware guy who was in charge of a bunch of different projects. He decided he wanted to step back, leave Apple. Begged him, please don't. And so he took over, quote, special projects and kind of – he took a very – background role in the company where he used to regularly be one of the guys that was either on stage or in promo videos.
Yeah.
And he's not anymore. He's a,
just seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Real good.
I would
engineer.
Like to go to a barbecue with him.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like he would spend the time, like he would be that guy explaining to me how the barbecue is doing what it's doing. And I would be enthralled by his explanation.
Yeah.
Strikes me as that kind of guy. Or he's got some sort of tinker thing in his house. Like, what? Bob, what's this? I'm like, oh, yeah, here, check this out. You see, we got the... And I'd be like, I feel like I'd be watching an Apple video live. He just strikes me as that kind of guy.
I completely agree. So he's been spotted on campus again. in a big way, taking much more notice and going walk around doing stuff. And so there was some investigations, and turns out he did take over a new project. He's pretty much
crazy
back
to
at
be
Apple.
That kind of guy. Like, Bob, we know you're important. What are you doing?
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be pretty cool. He's back pretty much working full time, and they figured out what the project that he's working on is. It happens to be one Apple Car project.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, so it appears that Bob Mansfield has taken over the Project Titan, Apple's car stuff. And there was a couple of other rumors that went along with this. Number one, they were going to try to start selling the cars by 2020, I think it was. And they're like, definitely not going to sell it before 2021 at this point, is what they're saying. If they're pushing their dates back, things kind of came off the road a little bit, and they're trying to figure out what needs to happen. But it also sounds like there's been a shift in direction where they're not going to be focusing quite as much on actually like what building and manufacturing a car would look like.
Shocker.
Building components for the car, like an automated driving system. And so the theory is that they'd build something like a box or an operating system that they would license to other car companies, other manufacturers. They'd partner with other manufacturers and they'd
like
build.
Like Tesla, who's looking for a new partner.
Exactly. Or it's a similar strategy to kind of what Google is saying they want to do. What's great about this, and the reason why I really wanted to bring it up, is because this is exactly what I was saying from the very beginning. Nobody else is saying it. And it just drives me. Oh, man.
Good job, dude. Virtual high five.
Boom. It just seems so obvious. Yes, they're going to build a car because you got to build a car to figure out how to make cars better. But that doesn't mean they're going to sell a car. I still think it's a coin toss whether or not they ever actually sell a physical car. But
nah, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely. I don't think it's completely off the table, but I think it's really unlikely. I don't think they can bring anything to the market that other luxury car companies can't, other tech car companies can't. You know, it's not like they're going to revolutionize the drivetrain in a way that Tesla's not. They're not going to improve luxury in a way that Rolls-Royce can't. They're not going to...
Or Tesla, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah. They're not going to, you know... really and truly, the place where Apple could add the most value is entertainment system, the brains of the car, self-driving entertainment system, those sorts of things, and build those products directly into somebody else's car, whether it's Tesla, Ford, or BMW or whatever. And I think what you're going to see is them partner with BMW and go down that road. And because BMW is working hard on making some, they're looking at Tesla and thinking, A, Tesla's proving there's a market here. B, we don't want Tesla to beat us.
So yeah. And I can definitely see them as you would choose between a Tesla and a BMW. I can see that. I think Mercedes and Lexus are kind of in their own separate category ish.
Yeah.
Old people. But BMW is very different. I still look at the Z Series BMW. I'm like, oh, that's pretty nice. I had someone in a Jaguar drove by the other day. I was like, oh, I still do like the look of that car.
Yeah. But
I think if I could, you know, like carte blanche, whatever, I've got the money, I could get any car I wanted. Tesla would definitely be probably a top three for the tech side of it.
If I can only get one.
Yep, that's it.
It'd be any car.
I know, McLaren.
Man. This would be, well, honestly, no, I'd love to get, so any car, so I can say it actually works and is well taken care of, so it would be a reliable car, reliable version of this, but a 69 Corvette Stingray, I would love that car. I would love, like, get one that somebody has put some real TLC into and pay $100,000 for it, because you can buy a beat up one for like $12,000, and... You can buy a restored one.
And then
like
didn't you want to? Didn't you turn it into an electric vehicle? Wasn't that your dream?
Not necessarily, but that would be cool. If I could have a second one, I think that would be great. Yeah, Tesla would be my top three, though. I'd love, like, yeah, my top three cars, if I could, would be at right now, would be a 69 Corvette Stingray, one of your Tesla model, the Tesla Ds, the, what the heck is the name? The dual motor ones. No, the dual motor ones that are just ferociously fast, really expensive. And then probably like a, I'm not exactly sure what era, like Rolls Royce or Bentley I'd want, but just one of their like pinnacle of like craftsmanship's one, like just beautiful luxury car, ridiculous, not necessarily high tech, just ridiculously nice on the inside. Those would be my three.
Okay. All right, let's see here. For me, so I absolutely love the Jaguar. I think it's the J series, which is more of the more sports car type of one. I'm on their website now and trying really hard not to get distracted. It looks awesome. And so maybe it's the X series or XE. I don't know, whatever. There's more of a, just the Jags. Whew, man, love them. They're awesome. I think Tesla's up there. But then I would probably also talk about the one of those flying cars, if I can go non-traditional.
That's pretty good.
That would be awesome. Oh my gosh, just be able to fly places. Man, what about that? What about a non-man drone? Does that count as a car? Or what was that one that was at CES where you can fit one person in it? You can't actually drive it. You just program it and it takes you there.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. Cool.
Yeah. So I agree with you. Apple to get, it reminds me of the same rumors of people saying Apple was going to get into the TV industry.
Yeah.
We were just like, yeah, they could, I guess, but what really would they be bringing to the table? And that's just not a market where the margins are amazing. And I think ultimately they didn't. Instead, they made a set-top box, the software,
for
the television. And I could see the exact same thing
with
cars and homes.
Yeah, I think what's really fascinating to me was that, like, the reason, if you follow that, you know, they were sitting there going, well, did it make sense for them to make an Apple TV because they make, like, the iMac and they make MacBooks. They make computerized screens. So this would just be a big computerized screen. Again, but the difference is that in the world of computers, like laptops, that has to come with a screen. So that's why they did that. But the iMac, I think, is unique because they looked at it for a long time as this space where they could really out-innovate everybody in the screen technology. They could make a better monitor that was baked in as a single, like, you know, in as a single setup. And so they were bringing something to the table by adding a screen to the iMac that other products couldn't match. Whereas they looked at the TV, and like you said, there are some really amazing looking screens out there, and they couldn't figure out how to build something that was so much better from a hardware perspective that it would justify the Apple prices. So they built the brains, because that's really all they could bring to the table, which makes a lot of sense to me. And then you've got, you know, I sit there and I go with the same thing with the cars. Could they build a great car? Yeah, I'm sure they could. Could they build something that was so much better than the other luxury cars on the market that it would really differentiate itself? It's hard to believe.
No.
You know, and, you know, maybe we're completely wrong on that, but there's some real nice cars out there, man.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, like you said, the opportunity is expanded CarPlay, where it's not just about the entertainment. It's maybe about the entire car experience. And then the actual driving piece, helping out with that part of it.
Yeah.
But we already know that they're not big into the artificial intelligence side of things. And
right.
So I don't even know how much they can contribute to that, if we're honest.
Well, I mean, but if you look at it from the perspective that Tesla's not really into artificial intelligence, they actually have criticized other companies that rely on AI too much for their self-driving cars.
And, well, I see Tesla as a company where they got out there, they got first, they're making some progress, and they're going to get lapped eventually.
I don't know.
They're just going to end up outsourcing it to someone else. I mean, they got it started, and then eventually they're going to team up with Google or someone, and they'll be perfectly happy with it.
Maybe. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm willing to give Apple the benefit of the doubt on this one, and
okay.
I could see them with the amount of money that they have and the amount of brain power that they have at the company. They would have to make changes from the outside. It seems that they would have to make changes, but I think that if any company on earth could make those changes, it's Apple.
Fair enough.
So yeah. But speaking of the Apple TV and where that went, so one of the big features that Apple really wanted to have with the latest generation of the Apple TV was a streaming TV service where replace your cable package. You buy an Apple TV, you plug it into your TV, you can have all of your, you know, you pay one low price, or you basically build an Apple Music for television and allow a la carte viewing, allow live TV shows and stuff, which would require some pretty crazy aggressive licensing setups with some gigantic media companies, and it never really came to fruition, and there wasn't a specific reason given for why it didn't come to fruition. Well, this week a little bit of drama coming out of Cupertino. Because it seems like we do kind of know who it is now, or what the issue was, and it's the issue was. And it seems like Eddie Q was being a little bit unpalatable. And he's a guy who, we've talked about him before, when he gets up on stage for like the different events and stuff, keynotes, he seems unlikable.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, he
something about him rubs you the wrong way.
Yeah, he just...
I would not go to a barbecue with him. Let me just put it that way.
Right. He doesn't seem... There's two parts to the reason why he seems kind of unlikable. Number one, a lot of the projects that he's the lead for seem to be fumbled. Like, constantly fumbled. Yes. People complain about them. People don't like about them. And they don't really coalesce into these projects that everybody loves.
It's like he
loves.
Doesn't listen is what's happening.
Yeah.
He has his vision. He wants to see it going. People go, ooh, I don't know. And he goes, no, we stuck to a deadline. We made a commitment to it. We're doing it. I'm like, yeah, right. It's not going to be good. We really need to go talk about it. No, we don't, because the deadline's already been set. Go make it.
Right.
It's like, Eddie, what are you doing?
And... yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And then when he actually goes up on stage and talks about it, it's not just that you don't like the products. It's just the way that he pitches it and the way he sells it, man. There's so many good – it's like Craig Federighi, like when he goes up on stage and talks about the operating systems, I like listening to him. Even when he talks about really boring, like under-the-hood type stuff. And where even I'm kind of like, really? You're getting – my favorite example is when you have your mouse and you flip it back and forth – the pointer gets large so you can find it easily.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I feel like if anybody else had told me about that feature, I'd have been like, okay, I don't know if you had to give me an entire 30 seconds talking about the pointer and explaining how cool of a feature this is. When Craig Federighi did it, I don't know. It was entertaining. And he just like, he gets so excited about stuff and he seems like sincerely to really enjoy the whole process. And he really pumps his team. Whereas I don't get that out of Eddie Q. So anyways, this wasn't just a bash on my personal opinion of Eddie Q, because frankly, I'm not the only one that seems to feel this way. They were talking about how – so these are the different things that he's being accused of. Or like in 2013, Q reportedly showed up 10 minutes late to a meeting with CEOs of Time Warner Cable and Time Warner Time Warner Inc. in a Hawaiian t-shirt, tennis shoes, and no socks, while everyone else was in a suit. A Jobsian move, if there ever was one.
Yeah,
Apple asked for full on demands for full on demand seasons of popular shows and approval for a cloud to DVR that would let users skip commercials on first run episodes, which wouldn't please advertisers in the least. So he'd come into these situations really unprofessionally compared to, like, just didn't read the room, didn't come wearing, you know,
and it's not Steve Jobs, just for the record.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the biggest issue is Steve Jobs. And it's weird because it's like, yeah, Steve Jobs didn't wear a suit ever. He always wore the polos and the jeans and the shoes, but his shoes were immaculate. His shirts were incredible. Like, yeah, they were just like black turtlenecks, but they were really expensive black turtlenecks. They were high end turtlenecks. His jeans were always super clean, and it was always the same uniform. He had a uniform. He just didn't. It wasn't a suit. And so it had a different level of professionalism when it came in, and it was Steve Jobs. So he had that kind of weird savant thing going on that,
yeah,
that Eddie Q can't get away with. Eddie Q just, like, and I don't know why that description of him showing up in a Hawaiian shirt and tennis shoes, just, yeah, it definitely sounds like something Eddie Q would do. Like, it's exactly, if you were to, that doesn't, I don't hear that description of him and think, wow, that seems like, you know, if you told me Tim Cook did that, I'd be like, really? Really? Tim Cook? Man, I wouldn't have thought Tim Cook would do that. But you tell me Eddie Q would do that, and I'm like, yeah, he'd wear, I guess, yeah, he'd wear Hawaiian shirts to important things. I don't know.
Well, even his dress during Apple keynotes, you're always like, hey, it's different than what everyone else is wearing, dude. One more button up, please. Just, come on.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great example. It's like he wears really loud shirts and really just like really flashy stuff, which is, as a guy who tends to do that too, I'm cool with that. Like, but just recognize it, like, in your in the, at the top of this article, the picture is perfect in that he's got three buttons undone off the top of his thing. So it's just got, he's got a little more chest showing than anybody else would have. No undershirt, just an unbuttoned shirt down to the third button. Like, just one more button, man. Button, and I wouldn't have as big a problem with you. But see, that's the thing with Eddie Q, is he knows that. That's why he unbuttons the third button. So anyways, turns out a guy like that wasn't able to put together a giant multi, you know, level negotiated package with all these different entertainment companies to deliver on-demand, affordable TV to everybody and make the Apple TV an indispensable product. Yeah, I guess and that's what's frustrating about it, right? Is it's not just that you don't get this product, it's that Apple doesn't get to sell the product that they wanted to sell, which was not just a computer for your TV screen, but an entire entertainment package. You know, whereas, like, when you compare Steve Jobs and the iPod, which is kind of unfair to do to anybody, but, you know.
Why not?
So what happens when you follow in his footsteps? It wasn't just the hardware. It wasn't just the operating system. It wasn't just iTunes. It was the iTunes store. It was, the music was affordable. It was cheap. It was available. It was easy to get a hold of. The hardware looked nice, felt good, was highly capable. The software all worked together. You just could plug it in, and it was really simple to use, and every single piece of the puzzle was there. Whereas right now, the strategy that the Apple TV is working towards, and it's an okay way to do it, is you download the app, and then the app has, you know, you download the Fox app or the Time Warner app or whatever, and then there, the shows that are associated with them, you can watch through it. I guess Time Warner wouldn't have an app that you can watch TV shows through, but that's a bad example. But, like, you know, I almost threw Comcast out there. What is wrong with me? They're Universal or, you know, NBC, companies like that, you can go through it and it works okay, but it's just a far cry from what Apple wanted to build.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's Eddie Q's fault, which I was already a little bit shaky on my like of Eddie Q, so I'm
hopefully he's busy focusing on Apple Music, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, jeez.
I like it. I'm just annoyed that I don't have the radio anymore. But
I really like Apple Music, but I'm looking forward to the updated version. But I think it, you get the feeling that it's despite Eddie Q, not because of him.
Ah, that's fair. That's fair.
And so, but speaking of guys that I do like, and everybody seems to be thinking, oh, maybe he's not a complete disaster. Tim Cook had to give he led the financial quarterly earnings this week.
And which still bugs me that he does.
Yeah, I know.
I miss the days when jobs just would never really show up. And then we did come in, say something profound, and then walk out like that.
Exactly.
Awesome. If I'm ever a CEO of a large company like that, that's how I'm going to be.
Yeah. Well, it just sets the tone in such a different way of we're not here about financial success.
Yeah, I don't care. Does Zuckerberg show up to his quarterly earnings?
I have no idea.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure he does, but I don't know that for sure.
All right, you keep talking. I'm going to do some research.
So Tim Cook, everybody seems to all of a sudden be like really like the guy because they beat expectations. They beat Wall Street's expectations this week, which is a big deal because everybody thought they weren't going to make enough money, and turns out they did make a lot of money. And Tim Cook told them, "Look, it's going to be services that are going to buoy the sales of our hardware." It was that hardware is selling pretty well, so maybe Tim Cook can keep this whole thing going a bit longer. As long as he doesn't name it the iPhone 6 SE. So he did. Anyways, at these meetings.
Zuck does go to his own meetings, by the way.
I believe it. It's not unreasonable. CEOs usually do. But it was just. I think it's an acknowledgement by Tim Cook that he's not Steve Jobs, which is not
That's
something
fair.
That Eddie. Yeah, we just complain about the fact that Eddie Q can't make that decision. So.
Fair enough.
So Tim goes and they ask him a bunch of questions. And sometimes, like, it's really interesting. Like, a lot of times they'll ask him about, so are you building a car? And he's be like, I can't tell you about any projects we're working on right now.
I can't confirm
or deny it. Yeah, he's really good at, like, at not answering questions at all. And then
it's like he doesn't even pretend to. That's the, like, no comment. Like, nothing. Just, like, give me a commentary on the industry or anything. Like, which is what Jobs used to do.
Yeah.
And you'd walk away going, okay, I feel like I learned something. And I still don't know if you're making anything, but you've thought about it.
But right.
Cook is just like, no comment.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, that was not fun. But then other times, like he'll just straight up tell him, like, yeah, this is what we're working on. In really weird, like, just where'd this come from? For example, in this, by the way, this is your virtual reality segment of the show.
Yes. I think we skipped last week, didn't we?
I don't remember. I feel like no,
we totally did.
I tried the Vive.
Yeah, there we go.
So Tim Cook, they had a they were asking him about like augmented reality and virtual reality, and he basically came out and said, "Look, we don't see artificial reality as the next big platform. We think that." Like, you're not going to build a device and build an entire platform around augmented reality. So basically, looking at you, Microsoft, your HoloLens isn't going to be this whole thing. He goes, but we do think it's going to be really, really important, really huge. You know, and Pokemon's a perfect example of just the very nascent beginnings of where this can go and what it's going to look like. And then he went on to talk about how, like, yeah, we're spending a lot of money and building out our augmented reality technology portfolio. And he's just like, you're blowing my mind, man. You're actually telling us what you're doing.
he's heard the criticism. Everyone's like, dude, you guys are doing nothing. You're idiots. Like, you're going to die and, slowly wither. And he's going, no, slow down. We are doing something. It's okay.
Yeah,
but it's
exactly.
Not anytime soon, so I'm going to tell you about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really fascinating that what's cool about this is we talked about this in weeks past and in months past where like they're buying these different companies that do facial scanning stuff and do spatial this and do this and this. And like they're clearly building out a portfolio of different technologies to do augmented reality. Like that's not like, that's been a pretty good theory, pretty solid theory for a while. And he's basically saying, yeah, no, we're not going to build a VR headset. We're not going to build an AR headset. We're going to build this into the phone, and we're going to have some really good, really great technologies that are going to work with it. And it's going to be huge. It's going to be really important. Don't worry. We're thinking about it. Which is pretty exciting. And then Zuckerberg was asked about that as well. And, you know, because they've got coincidentally, because they got the whole Oculus Rift thing going on. And his response about AR was they asked him actually specifically about Pokemon Go. And I'm just going to read it for you. I, like everyone else, am enjoying Pokemon Go. The biggest thing that I think we can take away from this as we invest in augmented reality in addition to virtual reality is that the phone is probably going to be the mainstream consumer platform where a lot of these AR features first become mainstream rather than a glasses form factor that people will wear on their face. We think that that in the future, more of where did it is? I don't know where the rest of the quote is. But basically what he's been saying is, I'll sum it up, paraphrase it, is that he does not think that in the next, it's going to be like 10 years until there's an Oculus Rift for not artificial reality, augmented reality. So he's tried the HoloLens out. He's tried the Magic Leap thing that I keep making fun of because they won't show us anything. He's tried those platforms. He's like, yeah, that's not going to be like VR. VR makes sense as a holistic technology. It's good enough where you can build a piece of hardware on its own to do VR and go into these digital worlds and be there. That makes sense. AR, it's not going to have a form factor that people are going to want to walk around in the real world, but your phone acting as
take that
AR. Game. Yeah, exactly. Your phone acting as an artificial reality thing, the window to this digital world does make sense. And there you're going to, and because you can test out these little features and incorporate them into more games and sort of try them out over time, companies like Google can build their Project Tango cameras into all of their Android phones, and Apple can, you know, we keep talking about this dual camera that the iPhone 6SE iPhone/iPhone 7 thing is going to have, and that it's going to, you know, that it's going to be used for professional cameras to give you like better zoom and stuff like that, that it's going to be all about photographs. And I think it will be largely about photographs, but if you got two lenses, you can start to do other things that you couldn't necessarily do with a single lens from a depth perception.
Yeah.
Perception. You don't know where perspective, objects are. Which I can say, which that's the whole point of it, is to give you more dynamic zoom, to give you more dynamic focus so that you can actually understand the depth of what you're looking at. And now all of a sudden they're talking about, yeah, we'll be able to do that and build that into our artificial intelligence or our augmented reality platform. Both those two real smart people seem to agree that that's the direction it's going. I'm hoping it's this generation has it. I wouldn't be surprised if it takes another
year. Are you on the yearly annual update cycle every 2 years, whenever you feel like it, years?
I buy the phones. So
whenever you feel like it.
Whenever I feel like it.
Are you going to buy? Well, I guess you'll wait and see then.
All right. I will wait and see. I am currently planning on not buying the next generation iPhone.
I was on the fence, and then you cannot see it in this picture.
I can't at all.
I dropped my phone on the driveway.
Ooh.
It's fine, but there's definitely a chipped glass piece upper half of it, which A, hurts the resale value. Oh, Jesus, I dropped it again. And then, so I'm just like, oh boy.
Well, and the classic problem with the chip is once a chip starts, it's easier for it to crack more. I mean,
I would imagine. Yeah. So I think I'm headed down this will put it at 2 years. So
kind of. It's about time. Jeez.
Exactly. It's about time.
So,
okay. I got a few things I want to share. Just kind of round it out, if you will. The first one, pro tip, the next time you send something, speaking of chipped glasses and stuff like that, something for tech repair, include candy in the box. You get a faster response. Specifically, Swedish fish. Because they don't melt. Yeah. So apparently there was this... yeah, it started with the Geek Squad. This guy went in, had to do a hard drive repair, and they got all this information back, and he was so thankful. He was like, oh, I want to send him something. And so they figured out who it was and sent him some Swedish fish, and they got an awesome reply. And I guess they started... That would be my dog. Defending our house. And so then they... it started to become a thing where they would do it later on, and they found it was be like twice as fast whenever they included candy in the box.
Really?
The repair.
That's,
yeah.
That's awesome.
A little thank you note. Oh, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Enjoy. So there's your pro tip. If you ever have to bring something in, make sure you do that. Next eternal question. Should you charge your phone overnight? What do you think?
Should you? I don't.
You do not? When do you charge your phone?
While I'm at work or while I'm in the car.
Oh, okay.
I got chargers strategically positioned everywhere.
Short answer, doesn't matter. Given the battery technologies these days, they all self-regulate, so it's okay. So we'll have a link that goes into the science behind it if you're interesting. And then I also wanted to follow up. If you're interested and interesting. Yeah, yeah. This will make you interesting if you watch that video. And I wanted to follow up on a story from a few months back. Do you remember we kind of talked about it where this guy was being charged with money laundering, but he was using Bitcoin in the process? And entire defense's argument was it's not really money laundering because he's using Bitcoin and Bitcoin is not real money. And if the judge decided that Bitcoin was real money, he was essentially going to be convicted of money laundering because they were saying, oh, yeah, he did it, just not with money.
It's high stakes, man.
It was high stakes. And the stakes paid off. Turns out the judge has decided that Bitcoin is nothing more than bartering in kind. So it's not actual money by the definition of the law. I know. It's not U.S. currency of that nature, which I guess is where money laundering is an issue. But it's more of like bartering of stuff. I give you some sheep. You give me some cattle. You give me some Bitcoin, all the same. So,
I will say this.
To which, I think this was interesting, actually. Bitcoin enthusiasts were, like, lauding it. Like, yeah, that's the right decision. This is great. Like, really?
This seems consistent because of the way that I've had it, heard it described to me before, is that you have to think of it as it's like gold or silver, or it's a commodity that you're trading.
Yeah,
so you're buying gold, then you'd use gold as payment for other things, and then you trade gold back into a U.S. currency. Which, once again, how is that not just money? But it's a difference. It's a distinct thing. So I'm not shocked by that.
Yeah, but there you go. So Bitcoin's not real money.
Bitcoin's
perfect for money laundering.
That is really funny. So I'm gonna wrap this up with one last article though.
Okay.
So a while back, we talked about Vizio, the guys who make really cheap TVs. And I stated at the time, the reason I wanted to talk about it was because I was like, I thought this was a Chinese company. Turns out they're completely an American company.
San Diego or something?
Working out of Southern California. Like, yeah, not at all. They just make really cheap TVs. And they had some really
Los Angeles. There we go.
Yeah, they had some really cool practices that were allowing them to drive down the cost of their panels and everything and be really price competitive. Seemed like a really cool company. And, you know, it's always great to be like, yeah, we got the American, you know, ingenuity and everything. Well, they're a Chinese company now. They got bought by Leico.
Leico? I don't know.
And it's a company it's a growing Chinese company. Their whole deal, it's kind of an interesting company. They started out building something. But they're into this idea of the actual name comes from Laico. They want to build ecosystems where they want to do phones and phone mm-hmm. service and apps. They want to do TV and streaming video services.
They got electric cars, Android-powered bicycles.
Yeah, they do all sorts of stuff, but it's this idea of you buy the hardware, you get their software, you get their services, and everything comes together. And because it's all built together, you get these giant synergetic things, and they have these eight giant ecosystems that they're trying to build up. And they needed to build TVs, and so instead of trying to buy Sony or something ridiculous like that, or build their own, they went and bought Vizio. So it'll be interesting to see where the company goes from now. I mean, Vizio says that one of the reasons why they're really good at making cheap TVs is because they had strong relationships with the panel manufacturers in China, and now they're actually a Chinese company. So that doesn't seem like it should hurt. so we'll see but I would expect the TV or the company to change over the next couple of years. And
so if I'm going to get my Vizio TV, I need to do it sooner rather than later.
Yep. That's what I would recommend.
Got it. Good to know.
Whenever you get around to it, go ahead and get it.
Someday.
Someday. One of these days.
Yeah. Sweet. All right, man. Good talk. Good show. Love it. And everybody else, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for listening to episode 253. We really do appreciate it. Okay, three things before we take off. You can check out all the show notes with all the links at furloughbros.com/253. They'll all be right there. And if you want them to get sent directly to you on that same page, you can sign up on the right to get them via email. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. And if you would also like to contribute, we have four different levels that you can do it. We got fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens. And they each have their own levels of rewards. So again, check out furloughbros.com to see how you too can become a patron. Okay, on that note, I am James Furlough. I always forget every single week.
I know you do. It's really funny.
Okay, I got to think about this.
I feel like I was fun with you.
Sorry, what?
Hanging on it too. I feel like I just want to leave you hanging on it too.
Oh, I know. I should. It was such a. Let's see. We didn't talk about movies because that would always be the obvious one. My Brother Beyond. No, we didn't do that. Oh my gosh! I can just hear people shouting at me right now.
I know.
Just like it was this. What? Let's see. It's not summertime. Oh. Let me think here. How do I want to, I got to think of the way of saying it without saying it. All right. So I am James Furlough, and my brother who earned some coin this quarter is right. Quarterly earnings. Isn't that it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
You got it.
Who earned some coin this quarter is, he didn't react at all. So I couldn't tell.
Sorry.
is Matthew Furlough. And we will talk next time. Oh my gosh. No, we're not, because I got to switch the stuff. Okay, now we will talk next time.